Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Star Wars Minute. It's the daily podcast where we analyze, scrutinize, and celebrate the Star Wars movies one minute at a time. I'm Pete the Retailer from PeteTheRetailer.com.
They call me Alex Robinson from AlexRobinson.fun.
I'm Susan Tekla Kriglenska from Skruglenska.com and the Comedy Film Funnel.
I'm Joe Dater from Nowhere.
That is Nowhere.
Nowhere, man.
Oh, wait, nobody's from Nowhere.
I'm originally from the Bronx.
Oh, okay.
That is Nowhere.
Yeah.
You're supposed to say the line. Come on.
I can't remember what you
said. Well, thank you guys for coming back for minute 32 of Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. 32 starts with Hux wondering why they can't blow up three tiny cruisers. And it ends with Leia's icy hand reaching out. We could almost, if she was holding a gun, Charlton Heston would be trying to pry it out of her fingers or something. It's a cold, dead hand, or maybe not.
My cold, dead hands, damn you all to hell!
It's a side note that has nothing to do with the show at all, but I was... Note it next time, you know, you're watching the music video for The Heat Is On by Glenn Frey, which I put on the 80s Vivo music video channel on Pluto TV. None of this is sponsored, but it's good to put on in the background every once in a while because it's kind of like old school MTV. But I put it on and The Heat Is On was on. And I was like, oh, he's totally doing the heat is on, but the sound was off, and I was just watching him, and there's a lot of clips of Beverly Hills Cop, but then also the clips of him playing, I was like, oh, he's really doing a lot of like Charlton Heston in agony in Planet of the Apes in this. If you watch, I should do like a little mashup of Glenn Frey and Charlton Heston. So
yeah, I'd like to see that. Now how is that appropriate in any way to a rock video?
In the video, how is what related?
How is that in any way appropriate to an 80s rock video? I'm very confused by that.
I don't know. It's just him performing, but when he's like singing, he seems kind of like,
Oh, and he's doing the like trying really hard rock face.
Yeah, yeah.
And it ends up looking like Charlton Heston.
Yeah, not like clips of Beverly Hills Cop and then clips of, you know, Glenn Frey wearing an astronaut costume being tortured by chimps. It's just him playing music, but he's kind of, you know, wincing in a way that.
Do you remember Jack Mack and the Heart Attack?
No.
Nope.
They were a band called Jack Mack and, I guess, it was led by Jack Mack. Right. And the band was The Heart Attack, which is that he left and his new backup band was called the Cerebral Hemorrhage, and that didn't get anywhere. But they were the band on some late-night talk show sometime in the 80s. I think it was the Fox late night show when they kept rotating the hosts. It started out with Joan Rivers and then Arsenio and Ross Schaefer, whoever, and they were the house band there, and the guy, the leader of that guy, that band, Jack Mack, presumably, would do those, like, rock faces, like, ah, ooh, ah, rah. But he would do them completely unmotivated, and, you know, because they were going to a commercial, and it would, you know, like a talk show, would cut to the band right before the commercial, and they would barely even start playing, and he was already getting into his, like, oh my God, ah, face. You're like, that's not convincing. It's got to be fake if he just goes right into it. Like, if he could turn it off and on like a faucet, come on.
Well, it's like the Hulk.
Like, at least.
Like Bruce Banner, he's always rocking, but yeah, it's just like that. That's my represses it.
That's my secret, Cap. I'm always ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, I'm always rocking.
Yeah. I'm always rocking.
One thing that, so I have a comment here about Star Wars, if I could just talk about Star Wars
we
for a second.
It in, I think.
Minute 32.
That's The Last Jedi?
I give credit where credit is due, but I feel like this little bit here where Huck says, like, what's the point of having all this big spaceships and stuff if we can't catch this one little spaceship?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it seems like raising the question does not, like, well, yeah, why can't you guys catch this ship? Like, the first iconic image of Star Wars we ever saw was a giant Star Destroyer attacking a tiny little ship and subduing it very quickly. Like,
catching it.
Yeah, exactly. To see now, to see that, and they're just kind of like standing, well, I guess we can't catch it. Like, it's pathetic. So
it's a convoluted and admittedly preposterous explanation for the universe's slowest space chase.
Why, if they're tracking them, why not just wait till they get wherever they're going and then attack them?
Yeah, I
why
know.
Not call another Star Destroyer to say, well, they seem like they're on this trajectory. We're pursuing them. We just need you to cut them off. You know, set up a roadblock, a la Smokey is the Bandit. You know, like
right. They've like what's it called? The Fulminizer, Fulminator,
the Fulminatrix.
Fulminatrix. There you go. Mm-hmm. The Fulminatrix, why don't they just jump ahead? Oh, no, the Fulminatrix got destroyed. Wasn't that the Dreadnought? I don't know.
That was the Dreadnought, yes. I am a listener to this show, and that's how I know that.
So what's the name of his
show?
We got
to listen to our show.
Anyway, well, doesn't matter.
Joe doesn't know because we haven't said it yet. We have to figure it out.
I only know Star Wars from this show. I've never actually seen it.
Like if
so the setup for this whole convoluted, this whole chase is so convoluted and like...
It's not
admittedly ridiculous.
They're not running out of hyperspace fuel, and they're not concerned about losing track. And why don't they just hyperspace jump to 100 kilometers in front of them? I mean, like just do a quick like boop, jump. I don't know.
Yeah, they could do many things. It seems.
It also...
I accept it. Yeah. It's ridiculous, but I accept it. And I accept it because... I accept it because...
I reject it.
It's a setup. It's an obvious setup so that the movie can happen. But then what actually happens in the movie is important stuff. Is important stuff like Rey going through the journey that she goes through, Luke going through the journey that she goes through,
yeah.
Ben going through the journey that he goes through. These are deep emotional things.
Yeah.
And the details of how we get to them...
It's
don't
funny
really
that none of the story, none
me.
Of the characters you mentioned have anything to do with this slow spaceship chase. So,
actually,
those things could totally still happen.
No,
exciting B plot than
no. The journey that Poe goes through is meaningful to me as well, and I think Finn's journey from a guy who sort of cares to a guy who cares a lot is meaningful to me as well. And so, yeah, and so you've got to put the setup up on a pretty shaky set of sticks to hold it up. That's fine with me. That's because it's worth it.
This applies to almost every, criticism of every movie, every single one. And
my criticism
biggest,
or his criticism?
Everyone's the okay. Global community. Just the holes are like what everybody, this is the worst movie because this is ridiculous, and it's, but they all have that, all of them. It's
every
just,
movie you think is not riddled with plot holes is, you just haven't noticed them.
Yeah, I agree. Or you, they're kind of oriented towards your own tastes where you're like, okay, I like that this happened, therefore I can accept this. or you know, the misdirection to you just seems too jarring. You know, it's that's one of the things about like declaring the best Star Wars movies and declaring the ones that are bad, you know, there's a lot of taste, you know, like I like Rogue One better than Solo, which I think probably says a lot about my taste in Star Wars movies. And from that, you could probably, you know, figure out a few other things that I like and not like. And, you know, it's just, you know, obviously there's another kind of person who would way love Solo above Rogue One. And there's nothing, you know, Chinese food versus Indian food, you know, like what's the difference?
Based on your liking Rogue One more than Solo, I can, just from that alone, I can divine other things you might like or not. I think you like an unmarried woman, the Jill Clayburgh movie, based on that. And I think you don't like Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, that's there. You're wrong, I think.
Based
yes.
on that. See,
yeah. I hate rom-coms, by the way. Does that say anything? I don't know. But I love Rey and Kylo. I love Rey and Kylo. Like, I love the romance. I wanted the romance. I was like one of the only people who wanted that romance to happen.
It's not a rom-com. It's like a rom-trag.
Yeah, it's a rom-trag.
It's a rom-downer.
No,
it totally has a happy ending. She redeems himself and he brings her back to life.
Wait, and they live happily ever after.
I'm the weirdo who loves Rise of Skywalker. I love it. I love it too. I didn't just like it. I love it. Yeah, that's good because it's very lonely out there. Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna bring up the Rise of Skywalker.
Okay.
Later.
Okay. In about two years.
Yeah. But the bad guys are incompetent is generally weak writing in a movie. Whenever you have a movie where it's sort of dependent on the bad guys being lunkheads, it's never as effective as if the bad guys are much more threatening. So in this case, you have the bad guys being lunkheads. Mm-hmm. Hux is a lunkhead. His whole, you know, his whole setup, he can't catch these slow moving small ships. I think it's mitigated somewhat by the fact that it's a controlled incompetence. Mm-hmm. And we learn later that it's sort of part of Snoke's plan. Because what he really wants is he wants the inside of Rey's brain.
He
gets that. So it's a somewhat it's a planned incompetence.
It's very much in character for Palpatine to come up with a plan that to everyone else seems like what? So, you know, a la the blockade of Naboo, which no one to this day has been able to figure out what exactly was his plan. So it is on brand in that sense. Well,
It seems counterintuitive, and that's how you get away with it, by hiding in plain sight with what seems like a bad plan or no plan at all.
Not to go back and get trapped in the Phantom Menace, but I understand the blockade of Naboo better than I understand Luke's rescue plan or the escape, the slow car chase here. I think it's not enough to. It's distracting a little bit, but it's not enough to completely derail me in my enjoyment of this movie. I think there are lots of other avenues that it could have, you know, like what if, you know, I think the idea they were trying to basically go with is a facsimile of sorts of the, you know, the Star Destroyers chasing the Falcon in Empire, you know, the asteroid sequence is essentially. They're trying to have like, okay, well, they can't escape in the normal way, so we want to have them kind of pursued, but not, you know.
And I think they'd be crazy to follow us into the asteroid field is a good enough explanation as to why they get away.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's exciting.
It works better there.
All right. Is it cool or is it lame? It's cool. All right. I'll allow it.
Right.
So, you know, slow motion spaceship chase.
Yeah.
Yeah. They could have done,
as I said before,
better differently, perhaps, but it's not enough.
As I said before,
would be
a bigger problem if Star Wars was science fiction in the traditional sense. This reminds me, I always thought that I wanted to produce a reality show called America's Slowest Police Chases and just have endless helicopter footage of very, very slow moving police cars.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Let me ask you guys a question. Pete and I have already addressed this. In this scene, we see the force fields that are around the Raddus.
Mm.
And they're visible force fields. You can see like a bubble around it. How do you guys feel on the visible force fields controversy?
Fields around the Raddus.
Susan?
I don't know.
Or do you have no opinion on it?
I hadn't occurred to me at all. And, you know, I guess it's hard to imagine what matter that would be made of that would be visible. Would it be, you know, light? Is it, what is it? You know, like what kind of, what
magnets.
Is it? Magnets?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it's an impossible kind of technology. It's energy
it's
that
magic.
Has... Yeah, it's a kind of energy field that you can't penetrate, which is a thing that happens in tons and tons of space movies and could not ever happen in real life. It can't exist. Can it? Is it no such thing? Can possibly?
We don't understand quantum mechanics. Anything's possible.
Yeah, I think it's possible. It's possible.
It's possible.
Why don't you find it?
Why don't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anything, anything made
we
visible.
Should hold up flags for when we're ready to do one of those.
You know, if they have the option of making something visible, why not? And if they can make it look cool, you know.
Yeah.
Well, what if? Cool, I mean, what? Why can't the laser blasts just sort of dissipate about, you know, sort of a distance from the ship as if they're hitting a barrier of some kind?
Right.
I think that would be just as well.
I think visually it does convey that they do have shields. And as we've established, if you can do something visually as opposed to having to say our shields are damaged or, you know, I think it's probably
I didn't notice that.
For the best.
When I was young, I never understood the whole thing with the shields, probably because they weren't visible. Like it never occurred to me that the Millennium Falcon had a sort of shell of energy around it that was deflecting laser blasts that I guess was coming from that dish on the top of it. Is that where it was coming from? Is that what that is? I don't know. But I never quite got that. It's just so. Not that I would have wanted it to have a big blue aura or something like that. That would have looked very, very dumb.
Special edition.
What about a magic shell, like a candy coating around it?
Yeah, like a chocolate sort of a thing that hardens when you... You don't like chocolate, but I like chocolate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I brought up the shields because I was wondering if the fact that they are in a shield gives more scientific feasibility to Leia's like surviving in a vacuum because she's in like kind of vacuum.
Hmm.
But anyway, you actually
see
can...
Princess Leia in a vacuum in this. Yeah. This minute.
Yeah. So should we launch into the? I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah,
go for it.
So yeah, so all right. So we're done with Hux, and a little mouse droid that I don't even really understand why that mouse.
I like the mouse droid. We don't get to hear the mouse droid sound, but
I like seeing the mouse droid. But why would a mouse droid be there? Because it would normally be ricocheting down a hallway to deliver a message. Or
why would a mouse droid be anywhere? Why a mouse droid? What is the purpose of this invention? What is the purpose of this damn robot? It just moves around like an RC car. What does it do?
I think
they're very important. They deliver messages and they scrub the floor.
Yeah, I think it's somebody's got to keep those floors so shiny. So.
But both of those things don't make sense on deck there, where Hux is, you know, doing his thing. You know,
I thought from the mouse droid appearance in A New Hope, I always thought the mouse droid was there when they send like a group of stormtroopers someplace, and so the stormtroopers don't know where to go, so they have to follow the mouse. Like that seems like what they're doing in A New Hope,
like a tour guide it's holding a up a flag,
catch it.
But again, right, this scene doesn't work. It's just like it's just interfering. There's no reason.
It's just getting in the way. I do like Hux talking to Vivian, and we do get to see Vivian in this one.
Vivian
and Adrian Edmondson from The Young Ones, and he's wearing that First Order hat with the little symbol in the middle. And God, if he had four of those, it would be so great. If he had four of those things across his forehead.
It's a missed opportunity somewhat, but
I know.
You can't go too, I don't know, I guess you could go too meta. I don't know.
I would have wanted to see all the young ones in this film, but I guess only three of them are alive anyway.
So Princess Leia is in space, you guys.
Right now?
Okay. So
Princess Leia's in space.
It turns out
Bowie's in space.
You can survive for about 2 minutes that way, and she did it in under 2 minutes. So this is not entirely crazy, but people can survive for 2 minutes. So they've done experiments. In the 60s, they did experiments, I'm sorry to say, with dogs. They would put dogs in vacuums, and they, for 90 seconds...
That's why all dogs hate vacuum cleaners.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They'd never forgive them for the death of their boy.
Nature and dogs abhor a vacuum.
Yeah, they did like 100 dogs in a vacuum.
Wow.
True.
I give up. How?
Where was this? Where was this chamber? Was it some enormous just vacuum chamber? And
They did them one at a time. Now,
after the first few, the next dog would not want to go. Right? He'd be like,
And they did it with chimps. They did try it with chimps, and chimps could last a little longer. And if it's under 2 minutes, they pretty much were okay. Even though this is true, the dogs would expand like balloons. And this is what would happen. So this is the one thing that doesn't quite reflect in this is your body would, you would puff out. You would expand.
Them dogs plump up.
You plump up. And your skin would hold you together, but, you know, hold you together okay. You would not explode. There's, you know, some people imagine you explode. You would
Kananga balloon.
Yeah. But like then two humans have been through this. Very, very briefly, and survived it. A few people have not survived it.
What were the circumstances of those two humans?
So one was testing, it was like around in the 60s again, late 60s, he was testing the spacesuit. And they put him in a vacuum to test for leaks, and sure enough, there was a leak. And he was out, you go unconscious in about 15 seconds, because your oxygen, it wants to exit your body. You know, your lungs immediately empty out. It could be very dangerous and actually rupture your lungs, and the oxygen in your skin and blood kind of dissipates and expands. He felt on his tongue the water, he felt the moisture on his tongue was boiling. Basically, the boiling point changes completely to whatever temperature it is. So he felt this guy who this happened to, this leak, he felt the water boiling on his tongue, but then, you know, passed out within like 15 seconds. And that was the last thing he remembered. And then he actually came to pretty quickly. They immediately got the air in, got the air pressure going, and came to and was fine. And then one other person, it was in some other situation that was like a work situation, and he was out for a little bit longer and had a harder time recovering. But you can recover from this. So she did it in under 2 minutes, and it's been proven that that can happen. Now, and the iciness on her also makes sense, because the, you know, water, you know, she's probably on the far side of a star. If you're on the near side, you're going to be in a very hot environment. If you're on the far side, you're in a freezing environment. Either way, your body will maintain its temperature, because there's no conduction or convection because there's no air. So your body's going to kind of maintain your temperature. You're not going to freeze to death. You're not going to boil to death, even though the space may have, you know, this incredible amount of heat to it. So that's kind of interesting too. But so you will have like this, either your water will evaporate and boil, or it will freeze. And so the ice crystals all around her do kind of make sense. Now, her opening her eyes, certainly that would have been damaging, because that would have immediately that water would have just, you know, kind of her eyes would have maybe not exploded, but it wouldn't have been good. She would have gone blind for that kind of thing. So that's
her eyes it's boiled.
Physics.
I can relate to all this because I had a friend who was one of those guys who would just, he would suck all the air out of a room. You know what I mean? You know those guys? And I think I felt like I was in a vacuum whenever he would speak.
We've actually seen this before in movies too. We saw it in 2001 because remember David Bowman was locked out by Hal and he had to just get
alien in Aliens. Doesn't he get sucked out into space? She gets sucked down.
The queen.
But like a goner.
In 2001, there's that scene later in the film who am I talking about?
Dave.
Is there
Frank?
Earlier in the film, as Frank is out there. No, you're talking about the scene that I'm referring to.
Yeah, where Hal locks David out.
The airlock. Yeah,
and he has to just quickly go from the.
And that's scientifically accurate. You could do that.
It's scientifically accurate, except for that he took a big inhale, and that would have actually been very damaging to him because his lungs would have probably been very badly damaged. So you have to exhale. You need to exhale. You need to exhale.
You want your lungs to be empty of
remember
air.
That. Yeah.
I thought you were talking about the point where earlier in the film where they Dr. Floyd, there's not enough room. The parking lot is full when he takes the shuttle to the moon, and he has to walk from a couple blocks away. So he gets there. Anyway. Before we even know that it's Leia, is another beautiful shot here that we get kind of all the debris floating out, you know, after this, everything gets sucked out and you see debris and then how slowly, essentially this kind of central piece of debris becomes, you know, Princess Leia, which is just another, again, we're already in shock because we were thinking, oh no, is this it? Like, did they just, you know, because we knew, you know, on the meta level, we knew that extratextually, we knew Carrie Fisher was gone. And so it's like, oh, is this it? And then we see her body floating. And it's a whole nother, you know, it gives you a whole nother kind of, less than a minute or so to kind of let you process that. And it's like, oh, that's her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, again, that point in the film, I'm still sort of recovering from seeing her sucked out of the wreckage, and now I'm seeing her body, and again I'm thinking, like, where are we going with this? Why am I seeing this? This is torture, you know. I feel so much for Princess Leia, and I'm connecting that to my feeling for Carrie Fisher, and now I'm seeing her just floating as a piece of space debris, as a immobile corpse in space, and it's hurting me so bad. It's really hard to look at that, and I'm. It's like, I don't know why are we doing this? What is happening? Go on.
No, I was going to say, again, in reality, it would have been harder to look at because she'd be twice her size.
Right.
But maybe she is. Maybe she is, and there's nothing for scale next to her, you can't actually tell.
I've never heard of the big Leia theory.
Yeah. She might be twice her size in that
Come
shot.
To CBS this fall. Well, we get the strains of the Leia music, which at the time was less emotional to me. But the between this, what's going on in this sequence, and then later when they kind of give her a little tribute in the credits, and then in the next movie, everything like that, the strains of Princess Leia's theme have made me much tearier, much weepier. In the last couple of years, part of that could be, you know, I'm suffering from parental emotional disease or whatever they call that, where suddenly, you know, commercials make you cry. But
no,
also, you know, it's taken on so much more weight kind of emotionally that when we hear, we see her body floating and we hear this little strains of the Princess Leia theme, I was like, ah.
Yeah, I agree. But it goes into what I think, and it continues in the next minute, what I think is the most beautiful rendition of that theme that I've ever heard, I think. And yeah, that music really gets to me, and the way it's performed, and it, again, we'll continue talking about it tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. On the next.
Her hand doesn't, does her hand move yet? We see her icy hand. Does it start to twitch yet in this minute, or is that next minute? Am I spoiling 33 here?
Let's see. Yeah, I shouldn't have said the eye thing. I'm so sorry.
Well, I don't remember.
Her hand moves. Oh, yeah, that does.
It does. Her hand, yeah, it does.
So
it moves.
We get a glimpse of what could be. Maybe it's not. Is this the end of Princess Leia? Maybe not.
Yeah, and that was again. I think there was something happening to me emotionally when I saw that start to happen that I can't even describe.
Her bracelet is kind of hanging off her arm in a way that they should have been more careful about. It looks like it has gravity to it, but anyway, just a little nitpicky thing.
It has gravitas to it.
It's gravitas.
And again, you know, the proximity to the giant cruiser in which there is some form of artificial gravity could account for all kinds of, you know, there's atmosphere and gravity in the ship. Tiny cruisers, according to Hux, but, you know, sizable from our point of view. So there could, plausible deniability could be like, oh yeah, sound and gravity could be coming from there. Sure. You know, like.
Little oxygen trapped in the force field.
Little bubbles. Tiny bubbles.
Seems like this is really when Snoke should be, like, putting his foot up Hux's butt. You know, he really got.
Not literally, hopefully.
Got all over him earlier, but he's got this. These ships are right in front of him, and he can't do anything about it. This is when you'd think your boss would be breathing down your neck.
Oh, but he wants them to escape because Snoke's plan.
It's suspicious that he's silent.
Yeah. And also, don't forget, we learn that Hux later on is working for the Resistance too.
Oh yeah. Wait.
Do you
not
think
yet.
At that point? Yeah, I don't think at this point he would be.
Maybe. Okay. I don't know.
Maybe. Who knows? Who knows when he's switched?
No, I think it's
also
all part of Palpatine's plan.
It's also that happens in a movie that, in my headcanon, does not exist. But let's talk about that another time.
Highlander 2: The Quickening.
Yeah, no, that was never made.
Oh. Well, let's. This again continues into the action starts to happen again in the next minute.
Yes.
But in the meantime, if you're looking for some Star Wars minute action, why not follow us on the social media that you partake in? Perhaps you've got on Twitter we're at Star Wars Minute. On Instagram we're at the Star Wars Minute. And on Facebook, you can go to StarWarsMinute.com/Facebook to get to the Star Wars Minute Listeners Society, to which I have made a hesitant return. I was off Facebook for a long time.
Long time.
Yeah, thank you.
Long time. Sorry.
It's all right.
I'm so caught up in the story.
I know. You went... But then I decided just before the season started, I was, you know, it's a combination of inauguration into a new season starting. I was like, let me see, test the waters and see if things were any different. And I've mainly kept myself limited just to the couple of the Facebook groups that I'm in, primarily Star Wars Minute Listener Society, which you can get to at StarWarsMinute.com/Facebook. And then hopefully you will join us, including Susan and Joe and Alex, back here tomorrow for a brand new episode of Star Wars Minute.
Star Wars Minute.